Ladies and gentlemen, storytellers of all ages, lend your ears to co-hosts Brad and Philip as we delve into the Marketing Your Attraction podcast.
Welcome to episode 3 of Marketing Your Attraction. I'm here with my co-host, Brad. Brad, how are you?
I'm doing well. Doing well. It's great to be back for episode 3.
I'm excited. A lot of exciting new content and new ideas that I'm excited to go through. So the theme of this episode is why? Why, Brad? Why?
It's a question I think all of us should probably ask a lot more before we start thinking about products. Attractions, designing attractions, marketing attractions is really just taking a step back and figuring out why. Yeah, before we get into our main topic, let's dive into the news. One article I saw this week that I found pretty interesting. I don't always love everything from Forbes.com. Sometimes their content's a little hit or miss. And this article was a little hit or miss, but I thought the overall concept was really interesting. It was something that, as a whole, I don't think the attractions industry, especially startup attractions like escape rooms and haunted houses, ask this question about, you know, why am I doing this? Why is my audience excited about this? And they just kind of dive into creating an idea and then going into marketing and hoping that marketing will fix it. And so the whole article was about when marketing is a waste of time and money. It was on Forbes.com on February 28th. And the biggest takeaway from the article was it was when businesses focus on marketing before really figuring out what they are marketing and why anyone should care, they struggle to find new clients, or in our industry's case, guests. The big takeaway for me was you can't just count on Facebook ads and Instagram ads and, you know, Google SEO without figuring out what is your attraction going to stand for? Like, what is that brand I'm going to build? You have to start with those fundamentals before you jump in to blasting it all over. And I think I see this a lot with these upstart attractions of, oh, I'm another escape room. I'm another haunted house. But you have to be a little bit more unique than that. You have to kind of think about, what is my average customer slash guest going to think of my attraction? What's going to differentiate me? And so this article just kind of went through building a brand. It was fairly, you know, just kind of on the surface and broad. So I didn't really dive deep into it, but I found it interesting. And that's what sort of started the brainstorming for this week's main topic. Do you have anything to add, Philip, on that?
I think that about covers it. I don't want to get too deep into it because we will be going into it in much more like targeted strokes.
Exactly.
Yeah, as we get into the why. And you have one other one before I share mine.
Yeah, so the PGAV, which they, if you're not familiar with them, they're a theme design firm, and they're also an architectural firm out of St. Louis. They do work for all sorts of industries, including the attractions industry. They've done a lot of work for Busch Gardens and SeaWorld over the years, among many other clients. They always do great. They're almost kind of like white papers, I guess, you know, sort of content marketing papers. Mm-hmm. And the one that they released most recently is called The Attraction of the Non-Attraction. And it's challenging you know, theme park owners and operators and just attraction operators in general to look at what else is in the market that people are enjoying. So the article does a really nice job of giving you statistics in an overview way instead of making it complicated. You know, they have nice graphs looking at statistics of what else are consumers enjoying out there. So it covers everything from Netflix streaming,
yeah,
to Hulu streaming, to looking at the popularity of sports, music festivals. And it's really challenging attraction operators to think about all of these different activities that the broad marketplace is enjoying. And are there parts of those that you can incorporate into your attraction? Many regional theme parks across the country have been incorporating different parts of many of these, you know, whether it's the music festivals or even with sports like Great America, which is the Knott's Berry Farm sister park up in San Jose. They share their park in Santa Clara with the San Francisco 49ers stadium, and they have a whole tailgating restaurant that's open on game day. So they're tapping into that sports crowd. So I found the article really interesting. It's only about 5 or 6 pages. PGAV always has fantastic content. So if you've never seen any of their past articles, I would recommend going onto their website and just looking at a lot of the PDF information they have. They had a great one a couple of years ago that looked at how season pass holders and membership holders of, you know, aquariums and theme parks and other attractions in our industry, what those folks value and how to better market to them. I used a couple of those ideas in some of my work at the park. So definitely give them a shout out. I believe just Google PGAV, it'll come up. I think it's PGAV destinations.
Ultimately, we're not really necessarily just competing with, you know, other attractions. In most cases, I don't think we actually are competing with other attractions. We're primarily competing with entertainment as a whole. I mean, you're competing with original content. You know, you're competing with Facebook putting $3 million into an episode of content. You're competing with people doing other things, even to the scope of people not leaving their house. You know, there was one like quote from this Aero Electronics, which Aero Electronics, for those of you that don't know, they own like they own 53 media properties in the kind of electrical engineering space, and so they are the entire media. And you know, when pushed to ask about, like, you know, why do you put this investment, that kind of a thing, they're like, you don't understand that we're not competing with this, you know, we're competing with people choosing a different career. You know, we're not just competing on like a product level, we're competing on an industry level. And I think that's what kind of this brings to the forefront, or this reminds me of that a lot.
Yeah, and I think a great example of looking at attractions competing against other industries is going back to what you mentioned with Netflix. That's why you've seen so many regional theme parks and even destination theme parks, just attractions throughout the industry that have been offering more and more limited time seasonal events. And that's been a great way to drive the business, because that, you know, 2 to 3 week, maybe 4 or 5 week time frame of these different events, they encourage people to come and visit, to get off the couch, put Netflix down, put YouTube down, put social media down, and come and visit their park, because it's instilling that fear of missing out. And in the past, when there wasn't as many different activities, and when you weren't competing against the internet as an entertainment venue, it was much easier for attractions to just sort of be the same every single day of the year for the most part. And you've seen this explosion of growth of these seasonal events in the last few years, because now they really are competing for your time against all of these other activities. That's just something to keep in mind, that you're not just competing against other attractions, but you really are competing for people's precious time. And time is so valuable, and it's so scarce right now in today's world, that you really have to have something compelling that people will put down what they've already paid for, the Netflix streaming and everything else, and actually decide to come and visit your attraction.
Yeah, I think that's that does segue kind of in into our next item, but some quick facts to kind of bring it home, I think, that go beyond this article, but just the concept of when you're looking at, like, basically entertainment time spend. And it's like, when you look at Amazon winning Emmy Awards is nuts. You know, this thing started off as a bookstore, and now they're in this content play. And Amazon and Netflix being the leading purchasers of films at Sundance, which is crazy. Facebook, you know, this year announcing they're putting $3 million into each episode of original content, which is higher than a lot of networks. Time launching a product division for subscription boxes, and Netflix putting $1 billion into product development. Like it's competition, I think, is a lot. I like this because it gets us into the why, but it also gets us into thinking about the larger context, you know, of the need that we're really satisfying versus just thinking of, or we're an attraction and people like to go to attractions.
Right. Like... Yeah. You have to think broader. That's for sure. So moving on from our news items, let's kind of tackle our main topic, which was directly related to what we were just talking about. We want to talk about that why, you know, before, whether your attraction's already designed or you're thinking of doing a haunted house or an escape room later this year, it's never too late to ask why. It's always better to ask why before you begin designing your attraction, but it's never too late to ask why. And, you know, Philip, we were just talking before we started recording, and you had some great insights on that. And I know it's something that you think about a lot.
Yes.
So why don't you sort of set the stage for us when we say ask why? What are we talking about?
You know, it used to be, I think, that marketing was pretty siloed. You know, like you have your P mix, and then you're really just like we kind of just act as a cog. Mm-hmm. You know, sales is like, I need this stuff to sell more stuff, make this stuff. And we're like, okay, you know, and we're measured by, you know, top of the funnel throwing leads in, and then we're measured by how many graphics and stuff, and then social media came on, and now we're measured by likes, and we're measured by, you know, infographics and all of this meaningless noise. I think right now we're seeing a little bit of transformation in terms of marketing being part of the strategic table, you know, like bringing marketing in early, kind of from the beginning, to look at the overall strategy holistically, you know, not just so where this gets to the why portion, you know, is it's not just here's the product, okay, marketing, do your thing and sell it. You know, it's a little bit more like involving it from the beginning of the discussion, asking why at every point. And it's something that we like to do. I do it all the time, kind of in joking, but also kind of seriously. You know, we, at least at Gantam, it's a lot of asking why in every context. On an individual basis, you know, why am I picking up these projects? I'm picking up like an individual employee basis, all the way up to a larger scope, which is, well, why are we, you know, why are we doing this thing? Why are we going to this? And then even from a larger scope to that, why do we exist? Mm-hmm. What are we trying to accomplish? And why are, you know, what is the why behind this product? You know, and getting us out of the concept of kind of taking the product first and really starting more leading with the why. Mm-hmm. instead of the other way around. So I think, I'm excited because I do think that marketing is shifting now to definitely being a strategic requirement. And I think that requirement is at every level. It's not just you need to know the why behind your business. I mean, that's good. It's a good start, but it trickles down. So to put that in more context, you know, having a why for your attraction is a must, and that's great. I don't think that's a stretch, though. And I think some of you think you might have a why, and I would challenge you to really figure out if you do actually have a why. And a why is defined by a human emotion or a need rather than just kind of a like your corporate story is not your why. And then from there, every decision you make, are you asking why when you make that decision? And not even just like we're going to do this new thing, but when it comes down to, as Brad was mentioning, like your events you're doing. Okay, well, we're going to do something for Halloween or Christmas, or we're going to open and put in a new escape room here. We're going to do that. Why? Why are we doing this? Mm-hmm. Oh, well, revenue. Why? Well, people come to the park more. Why? You know, just kind of trying to frame everything, every step along the way, I think.
Yeah, I almost think of it as the questions that children always ask parents. Mm-hmm. You know, why is the sky blue? Like all these simple questions that I think sometimes we forget to ask as we get older, and they become really important because when you have to justify at every stage of that, like Philip, like you said, asking why at every stage, you start to find holes in your argument. Because it's fun to just think of new ideas, new attractions, and you just want to start building them.
Yes.
We've all been there.
Yeah, that's the fun part. Yeah, we get trapped in that like tunnel vision.
Yeah. And you just want it to work because it seems like a good idea. You're personally excited about it. And as soon as you start asking why, you have to justify it to yourself. And you have to take a step back and really think about, okay, who's my customer going to be? Who are my competitors? You know, there's so many different angles to look at it. But also, is this product right for me and my team to create? You know, is this attraction the right one to create? Is this the right environment to do it? Is this the right location? There's so many different steps along the process where if you take a step back and ask those why questions and challenge yourself, you can stop yourself from making some really big mistakes that can doom your business or your attraction if you're not really thinking about the strategy before you're just building it. I forget. I want to say maybe it was Richard Branson. You may have heard this before, Philip. So correct me if you do remember. But there was an entrepreneur who said, before you start building anything or designing anything, write that press release. Write the eventual press release that will be released when you launch the product. Write that in the early stages when it's just a concept, because that helps clarify your thinking, and it really forces you to ask a lot of these why questions. And it's something I've done a number of times, and you realize, like, as you're trying to write a press release for this product that's not even really designed yet or fully concepted or, you know, attraction, whatever you're working on, it's a great reminder of how much work you have to put into the strategy of why you're doing it when you really have to try to put that to paper and try to describe it to, you know, this imaginary, you know, journalist or this, you know, guest or customer. So that's a great advice that's helped a lot for me. Do you have any examples of what's helped you kind of answer this why question and a process you've used for it?
Yeah, I have a few tools. Before I mention a tool, I want to tie it a little bit closer together to kind of make sense of it. Like, why this, why? How this all comes together is the stronger your understanding for all of these components and the stronger your compass in this, you know, that makes the marketing almost effortless. You know, when you have all these questions answered ahead of time, then it leads directly. You know, your team has so much less guesswork and so much less work to do when it actually comes down to marketing, because you understand the emotion that the thing is supposed to convey. You understand the overall purpose. You understand what you're trying to invoke in the audience and everything that you're trying to accomplish from that macro level. And then kind of when we get it in the marketing team, you know, that's what we need to, mm-hmm. to create really impactful marketing messaging is really understanding what role this plays in the context of our audience. You know, why does it matter to them? What emotion are we trying to get for them? And when we've all figured this out together ahead of time, it makes that process so much easier. And I think it ultimately ends up saving you a lot of money. It makes everything more efficient. So I have one that I worked on this past weekend. I think I called this, I don't remember what I called it, but I think it's like, I think it's the goal pyramid. But anyway, if this is actually someone's idea and I stole it, I'm sorry, I didn't know. So I'll paint this picture in your heads. Imagine a pyramid. Okay, so there's a pyramid, and there is one slot at level one and two at level two, three at level three, four at level four. So I did this workshop recently over the weekend with a nonprofit, and we worked through creating this pyramid. And basically how it works is the pyramid at the top is your ultimate concern. It's your overarching why. And then the next phase down is how you accomplish that why. And the next rung down is the what's that you do that connect to the how's that ultimately connects to the why. And the very bottom is your, you know, your quarterly objectives, your goals, your tactics. It's all that transitionary stuff. And the concept is the top of your pyramid, the first two rungs, your top rung never changes. You know, your why as an organization never shifts. The how of what you do very rarely shifts. That's like a multiple year process. And the what's can shift every, you know, every 1 to 2 years. And then the bottom level is your, those are the things that you're trying to do. And I made this pyramid, and the concept, how I use this is once you take everything you're doing, you just keep asking why, and eventually you construct your overarching, your level one priority, right? And then you figure out what fits in the pyramid. And the way I like to do it is you can't have more than two hows. You know, like basically you're capped. So you have to, it forces you to decide what's essential and what's not essential. And then you can only have four tactics or main objectives that you're working on at a time, which is enough for anyone, any like group to be working on at a time. And every time somebody asks you a thing like, oh, let's do this haunted house thing, then you take it to your pyramid and you're like, okay, first of all, does it fit into one of the tactics that we're trying? Yes or no? Okay, yes. Two, does it fit into one of the three what's that we do? Okay, check. It fits into one of them. Okay. Does it fit into one of our hows? Okay. And then ultimately, does it accomplish our why as an organization? And I like this framework. There's a few others. I can give an example of how this pyramid fleshes out if you think that might be useful. Mm-hmm. But okay.
Yeah, it just looks so simple and straightforward. On paper, you know, it takes a long time to strategically think through it. But I think yes. The great part with the system you're using is once you have it thought out, you can present it in a really simple, straightforward way to anybody. Yeah. It doesn't feel overwhelming. I think sometimes if you try to jump to a business plan or, you know, these long presentations about, you know, who you are, what your brand is, and it can get a little overwhelming.
Yeah.
And this is just this is a nice one slide pyramid.
Yeah, we're
showing
few
really boxes well. And yeah, it looks really good. So
we go this is for the Stream Kids Expo. Stream Kids Expo is a nonprofit up in Santa Clarita, California, and it was founded by a 16-year-old girl who wanted to see a change in the schools. So we spent the weekend workshopping this pyramid, and this is already an established, you know, nonprofit. They've been doing expos for a while. She's gone through a lot of incubator programs. She made it through the Amazon program, and it's been featured in magazines, and it's crazy. I'm like, I wish I was doing that when I was 16. It's nuts. So we start off the top of the pyramid. Your ultimate why is kids need permission to explore and own career possibilities. So you notice at the top of that why, there's like the emotional connection, right? This is the thing, the emotional connection and the purpose. So that would be, you know, that to us for marketers, that fits perfectly into, now that we have that, you know, we know how to market this. You know, we know that that's what we're trying to convey, is that kids need permission to explore and own their career opportunities. And that is, you know, it's very emotional. It hits those things. The hows, so the way they accomplish that is either by learning and doing the task, or through real deal conversations with industry experts. So that's very, you know, it's a very clear thing, and you can look at that immediately. If this were in a press release, for example, you could look at that and say, oh, this is what they do. This is the why, and this is how they do it. And you're like, oh, okay, what do you do to achieve those things? So the three what's they have is student-influenced expos. Again, very specific. You know, student-influenced expos is very specific. Peer-nominated career scholarships. And the third one is parent-centered career discussions. So a very defined. When you put it in this, it also helps you kind of figure out your uniqueness. You know, why this is not just another, you know, basic thing. And then the bottom are their goals or what they're going to do. You know, for the end of the year, they're going to do 5 expos, right? And so then what you do is you take that 5 expos and you say, okay, we want to do 5 expos. Does it qualify one of our what's? Yes, because one of our what's is student influence expos. Does it qualify the next tier up? Yes, it does, because the expos allow real deal conversations with industry experts and they allow students to learn by doing the task. Got it. Does it overall achieve our why, that kids need permission to explore and own? Yes, it does, because the expo allows for kids to explore these opportunities. So it does. So this checks in. Mm-hmm. And what we found is when they did this, you know, they had a lot of other people asking them to do a lot of random things. And we were able to take this pyramid and they go, no, I don't think it actually fits, you know, because it doesn't hit one of these things. So that's a really easy one. I mean, there are others, but that's one I've had success with. Or just that concept, you know, you might be like, I think initially they were really like, oh, we have to pick, you know, we can't do everything. I'm like, no, you can't do everything. And I like that, but you might be an organization where that structure doesn't fit, or maybe it's too wide or a thing like that. But I would encourage you to kind of narrow it down more, because that's another thing that we see a lot in the marketing space, which is why I like this exercise so much, is it makes you focus on one why, you know, not like we're everything for everyone. And you're like, well, I can't market that.
Right.
You know, like.
Exactly. No, it's a great way to clarify your thinking. And like you said, even if the model's not 100% right for your business, it will at least, you know, get you started in the right direction. So that's a little bit about asking the question why and really sitting down and kind of thinking about marketing your attraction while you're building your attraction, or hopefully even before you're building your attraction.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so that is our summary of asking why, and it's one of those topics that is very deep, and I'm sure we'll be coming back to it in ways or not. But if you take nothing else away from this episode, maybe you're not going to use my pyramid or some of our other tactics. We really just want you to think about the concept of understanding that, you know, your product is at the bottom, basically. Your product is there, and really what you need to get to is the emotion behind what it is that you're doing and kind of the overall purpose for it. And the clearer you are as an overall business on what is meaningful that you are doing, then that stems into when you might bring an attraction in or a temporary event or whatnot. And then that allows everyone to be on the same page and allows you to communicate what you are and what you aren't. And that in marketing is gold, because when we can do that, then we can much, much quicker get to the meat of what we need to do. And so that's the close of our topic. If you enjoy this podcast, of course, subscribe, give us feedback. We have a email opt-in set up for you at marketingyourattraction.com. You can go there, marketingyourattraction.com, marketingyourattraction.com. I'm going to keep saying it. You can go there and put in your email, and you can get not only episode notifications, but some expanded notes from us and information on what we're working on. And you can, of course, reply or email us from there if you have suggestions. So once you're on the email list and you get those notifications out, you have Brad and I's emails on there, so you can let us know if you have stories that would fit into this, or if you're having challenges with asking why, or if you'd like to see this funky pyramid that Philip made. it's like the Philip pyramid. You can request it from us there, and we'll send it to you.
We'll talk to you next episode. Thanks for joining us.